Osborne Cox?
Yes. Who is this?
Is this Osborne Cox?
Who is this? What time is it? Who are you?
I'm a good Samaritan. I'm sorry I'm calling at such an hour, but I thought you might be worried.
Worried?
About the security of your shit.
Welcome to a new edition of the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson from Guelph Politico. This edition of the Guelph Politicast, I am pleased to begin a new series, which I'm calling Fireside Chats, even though we were not by a fire, and it is not directly related to the root of the Fireside Chat, the origin of the Fireside Chat, which was goes back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the heyday of the radio and in the middle of the Great Depression, he would start fireside chats to talk people through the turmoil and the depressing, obviously, of events of the Great Depression, and that would become eventually the president's weekly address, which actually still goes on and has of course evolved. And you can watch the president of the United States give his weekly address on YouTube now, as times have changed. But this is a podcast, obviously, and so the Fireside Chat is just a term I've given to these discussions I'm having with incoming Guelph City councilors, and this is the first of what I hope will be many discussions with Guelph City councilors. And for this inaugural Fireside Chat, I came together with Phil Ault, who is the councilor-elect for Ward 3, and James Gordon, who is the councilor-elect for Ward 2, and we got together and we talked. Not so much an interview per se. I didn't want it to be very interviewee. I wanted it to be more of a discussion, more of a conversation, and I hope that comes across as you listen. We touch on a number of subject areas, including how it feels to win the municipal election, their own expectations for what's ahead on the job, the expectations of others in terms of what people are hoping they accomplish on city council, what city council orientation's like, what that job training is like, and what has surprised them about the process so far. And eventually we get to, you know, what they want to do first on the job in terms of priorities as well. So without further ado, let's go right into the Fireside Chat, which was, again, not by an actual fire, sadly, but it was, however, near a very loud espresso machine. I caught up with Phil Ault and James Gordon recently in downtown Guelph. So first of all, I'll let you guys introduce yourselves so that people know which voice belongs to whom.
Okay, I'm Phil Ault. I'm a councillor-elect for Ward 3 in Guelph.
I'm James Gordon. I'm councillor-elect, Ward 2.
Well, I guess to begin with, election night, and it was a unique experience for the both of you because, you know, hate to phrase it this way, but you won versus previous
we won.
Now he tells us
what happened.
I know you Phil called into CFRU on election night, and obviously very jubilant. But aside from that, you know, how does it feel to win an election after
being serial losers?
Well, it felt good. It felt like I had basically passed the biggest job interview that I'd ever had. And really, I have to give an awful lot of credit to the people that worked with me. We had a fantastic team of volunteers and super supporters who were there right from the get-go, right to the end. By all accounts, it was not my doing. It was a collective effort. It was a great effort, and I'm happy and proud for everybody involved.
That's right. He was reading from my script. I think for me, it was a fairly unique experience because, as you know, I ran all year. It was running provincially the winter.
That's right.
So it felt, with just a little summer break, that it was... I realized that my municipal campaign actually was the culmination of a campaigning period. So winning that, I owe a lot of that not only to the team that I gathered for municipally, but the team and the mission and the fact that I was out there all the way through the spring time as well. So it did feel good. And it's a new challenge, and just winning is a new challenge too, because I think Phil and I both have had experiences where we've run for office before and probably not with huge expectations of winning, and this time we both did something, I think we both designed something, we thought, hey, if we do this, we can win this, if we get the right team, we get the right messaging.
You can probably say this now that the election's over, but when you ran provincially back in the spring, was it the intention of, if I don't win this, I can segue to municipal politics?
Never thought about it? No, in fact, if you had told me in the spring when we met that, oh, James, are you thinking if you didn't go in this, you're going to run municipally, it wasn't on my radar at all.
I'm going to chip in there because I had James over sitting in the backyard just having a beer and saying, I really think you should run.
Fault.
And he didn't want to run. He said, look, I've got campaign fatigue.
Yeah.
And my view of it was that the stars were in alignment in so many ways. Because James had run. We didn't know what Ian was doing. But there was very clearly an anti-incumbency mood out there. And I think, me included, I don't know whether James would say this or not, but I think a number of the people that got elected didn't get elected by virtue necessarily of us being the best thing that's come to Guelph since John Galt, but more importantly, that we were not incumbents.
Right. Mm-hmm. Any stories from the campaign trail? Like any wild promises people wanted you to make? Any slam doors or who are yous or get off my lawn?
I think the story was about, it's funny, a story about a story. There was a story created, some of it by the press, some of it just by the vibe out there, that there was two viciously opposing camps. And that story continued after the election. So, and it centered around the mayoral race, which was a little bit brutal. But I don't know if you experienced it, Phil, but at the doors, people wanted to talk about that. Who are you supporting for mayor? Or they'd say, gee, I hear it's pretty, the city's being run terribly. We've got to turf all those old guys out. But a lot of those were stories. So Phil and I bet you we had a common experience. We had to deal with those stories, and it deflected a bit from the message that I just wanted to deliver. I just wanted to connect with people and see what they were looking for. But it was difficult when that taken over, and it wasn't, for me again, an echo in the provincial campaign. That election, the agenda was totally driven by the Tim Hudak scare.
Right.
So it was really hard to say, hey, let's talk about something positive, what you'd like to have instead of what you're afraid of.
People tried to frame the election in terms of progressives and non-progressives, and that was very clear, but that was a mega frame, and that was not what was happening at the door. Nobody really cared about that. They were concerned about Urbicon. They were concerned about downtown redevelopment. They were concerned somewhat about taxes. They were primarily concerned about snow and about leaves and about street maintenance and about the small issues. And I don't know whether that's Ward 3 related, but what I found, and it was very profound for me, is that the average age in certain areas of Ward 3 is probably about 80 years of age. And so the issues are never going to be the issues that people want to frame the election in. They're going to be real meat and potatoes issues, because we have a lot of shut-ins in Ward 3. Come wintertime, if they can't get out of their houses, they're not leaving until the spring. So in that sense, I think we have to be very, very careful about framing the election in terms of progressives and non-progressives. I feel, and I call it being Guelph positive instead of progressive, because I really do want to lose that label at this point. Mm-hmm. If we want people to be Guelph positive with everything that means, with being on the forefront of urban redevelopment, on the forefront of environmental stewardship, we have to also acknowledge that part of that contract is dealing with the small things that affect people on a daily basis.
Was that a surprise to you, knowing how many people of that advanced age live in your ward? I mean, is that something you've learned in your experience going off?
I had no idea how significant it was, but it was pointed out to me by another candidate that apparently the demographic in our area is such that the average age is 75.
Really?
I think that's a little high, but nonetheless, it does speak to the fact that we have an aging population in Ward 3, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's the same in Ward 2, where James is from, and elsewhere in the city as well. Guelph is an aging city.
What did you learn about your ward?
Oh, well, see, we'll have a contest, Bill, because I've got a lot of the seniors' homes there, the River Glen,
right.
I've got their
seniors. My seniors will beat up your seniors any day.
Come on, no, I'm tough, yeah. But I did learn something, again, it follows right through from my year of campaigning. Ward 2 has a really, really extreme income disparity, and some of that is based around the seniors who are on fixed incomes, but it extends right from the downtown core out to Guelph Lake, sprawl, new suburbs out there, and in between there's the Brant Avenue area, Waverly area, that are really struggling. Everyone there, if they have a job, they're a temp job, they're jobs with no benefits, the ones that can't support families. And yet there are people that are really, really thriving, so that it's a microcosm of what's happening in the country right now. There's that middle class has disappeared, there's up in extremes, and that creates tensions, and it's not sustainable. And those, so it would really vary as to what street I walked down into, what their outlook was and what their mood was. And also something I remember you and I talking about before, Adam, that the more struggling you are, the more disenchanted you are with the whole system that put you there. And so the struggle often was not talking them into voting for me, but just talking them into voting, period.
I had the same experience in the Willow Road area. Willow Road probably has the greatest economic disparity in Guelph. I mean, it is, in some senses, really desperate. There are very few jobs, there are very few opportunities, and I've got to give tremendous kudos to Arnold Willow for the work that's being done in there. But that doesn't necessarily translate down to the level of the individual household and the individual voter. There is so much disillusion with what people have experienced. I think we're experiencing third and maybe fourth generation poverty in some of the areas of Guelph, and probably it's similar in
Ward 2 as well.
It
becomes a lifestyle.
It really is a lifestyle, and I think it's worthwhile for all politicians, and I certainly hope that Mayor-elect Guthrie does come out and visit some of those places to see just how deep that poverty is. It's great that we have a really wealthy population in Guelph, but we have to contrast with the deep, deep poverty that does exist.
It's hidden a lot of times. In fact, one of my campaign experiences is I went to a place that Phil recommended to me. There's that great Waverly Drive food project they're doing out of the school there. And one of them didn't name a name, but said a counselor had visited this not too long ago and said, there is no poverty in Guelph. And it's because that, whoever that was, and it's common, if you're not witnessing it, it stays underground. It's a whole subculture. And if we are going through with the mindset that it's a minority of people that should just pull themselves up by their bootstraps, then we're not going to address a problem that's really getting, really growing.
And what's really neat about that as well, sorry to carry on with this, but I think it's very important that we appreciate in Guelph that there is a tremendous unorganized group of poverty activists that are really taking the bull by the horns and trying to address some of these problems. And it's not necessarily Lakeside Baptist Church or the Food Bank or the Labor Council. It's people that are just saying, in an informal basis, we must deal with poverty and wealth. They're getting things done that the institutions that we would we would expect to be doing it just are not addressing.
Well, given all that, is there, going into council and going into your first term next week, is there tremendous expectations either put upon by yourself or put upon by other people in your wards to do something about this?
Well,
are you feeling that?
I think because our first task is going to be around budgeting, it would be, without raising awareness and representing those lower-income marginalized citizens, it would be pretty easy, I betcha, to say, oh, we don't need that service, we're trying to cut back right now. And I betcha I share this with Phil. A lot of those things are non-negotiable. And so we have to stand up for those kinds of services that in other municipalities, other forms of government, where they get an austerity mindset, the things that they'll get rid of first are the ones that affect the people that need it the most. And that's something we just have to remember as we're going forward.
Yeah, I think in some senses I'm just plain lucky to be on council, and I'm not going to be able to address all the issues that I really want to, and that does concern me. I mean, I think I'm putting perhaps a bit of pressure on myself. I can't solve poverty in Guelph, and I can't solve economic disparity. But what I can do is I can look at things like the bus system, and I can look at social housing, and I can bring a voice to City Council, which I think probably James shares, and I think others share it as well, that says that these are chronic issues that must be addressed. As we move further into the 21st century, I read an article in the Independent in the UK just the other day that said fully one-third of the poverty in the UK now is young people. Well, that's coming to Guelph pretty darn soon. Mm-hmm. And unless we deal with that, the 21st century is going to look pretty grim for a lot of people under the age of 25. And I think, as I said, I'm lucky to be at City Council. I'm lucky to address those things. I am concerned that in some sense I will let myself down, because James is quite correct. There are some things that we're never, ever going to be able to deal with, and I still want to deal with them.
Well, speaking of things you have to deal with, I wanted to talk a little about your council orientation, because like any job, any new job, you have to do your job training. So right. What has that been like? What's involved there?
It's been a pretty positive experience for me. And for the veteran counselors, I didn't know, I don't know about you, Phil, but it's a pretty new process they're taking us through. And some of the ones who had been previously on council, previously elected, are taking it and finding things they didn't know before, and finding it's accomplishing two things. It is getting us oriented. It's showing us the ropes of how things, the mechanisms work, how the systems work. But it's also a team-building exercise, because we're sitting down together in the evenings and getting to know one another and getting ideas. And I find as much happens, I don't know what you feel, but like when we have something to eat before the meeting starts or something, the little connections you make with other counselors and sharing ideas and finding ways to move forward, it's been really valuable. And it gives me an excitement for the job. You know, you get locked into that election mode, and which is like giving birth when the election's over, and you forget about nurturing your child, right? So I think that this is the nurturing stage we're doing now.
I think team building's been very, very positive. We have not known the other counselors in some cases ever. I couldn't have told you the difference between a Mark McKinnon and a Christine Billings before I was in the same room with them. They were names. I saw their pictures on signs, or I heard about them. But in terms of what differentiated them, not being facetious, I didn't know.
Right.
That team building, I think, is very important. And we are going to disagree on a lot, but we're also going to agree on a lot. What I thought was also very interesting about the orientation is it's very much an orientation to how City Hall works. And what I like about it is that it does reinforce that there's a significant difference between establishing policy and establishing programs and micromanaging. And I think that it's very easy for a counselor to believe that they can actually call up any city worker and say, hey, I need something fixed. And that's clearly not our job. That's clearly the job of management to do that, and we have assigned them a task, and we need to recognize that once we've assigned them the task, that we expect them to implement it. We don't have the right. In fact, I think it's a bit galling, actually, for us to go behind their backs and say, to somebody, you must do this because I'm a city councilor. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good thing, and I think it's a very humbling thing to immediately set us straight on what the do's and don'ts of the city councilor are.
So it's more a matter of being a facilitator than a boss is what you're learning, in other words.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the other thing that is reinforced is that we are, in some senses, the go-between. Between City Hall, the administration of City Hall, and the residents whom we represent.
Mm-hmm. What surprised you about the process so far, in terms of the actual nitty-gritty of being on council, if anything?
I think learning what systems actually are in place already, I realize that I've been sitting on the other side, making delegations to council, lobbying city council, lobbying staff for so long, that I realized that I wasn't actually aware of how those inner workings go. Mm-hmm. And also to know that there are, yeah, sure, it was funny, we were warned last night, Phil, that staffers don't like to be called bureaucrats, and maybe we don't like to be called politicians. Mm-hmm. But within that so-called bureaucracy, there's a great staff of people with vision, with great ideas, and they actually want to have a partnership with councillors because they rely on that to move their vision forward. We rely on them to move our vision forward. So learning what the possibilities are for those effective partnerships and how to make them not divisive, not adversarial, you can see those possibilities, and that's exciting.
I think that there's another concern there too, and it's one that I want to be very careful about, and that is that I think that there's a tendency to rely upon the experts, and we have in many respects in Guelph a culture of expertise or technocracy, and I like having the experts around, but I think it's absolutely incumbent upon council to appreciate that its job is to establish policy, to establish programs, and then for the technocrats, the administrators, to implement that. And it's nothing disparaging about technocracy. I want an expert to be in charge of an area in which they have expertise. Makes a heck of a lot more sense than having somebody that doesn't know what's going on.
Right.
But at the same time, that give and flow that James and I are talking about, it goes the other way as well, and that's really key to us. The other thing that surprised me, and it shouldn't have, but I think it's really important for people to appreciate, is how incredibly small Guelph is. Yeah. The number of people that I've met in City Hall that I've known for 40 years is astounding. The population, as much as we've grown from 40,000 when James and I were just wee bairns in diapers, to 120,000 with the university of 20,000 that have stayed around, or have come back because Guelph is just a darn good place to live, is incredible. That's a good thing, I think. I think it speaks volumes about why this town is worth preserving and improving. We don't want to tear down the good stuff. We want to build it up, and we want to make certain that this city is a city for the 21st century that is emulated everywhere in Canada.
Is that, though, because maybe the people around civic politics are a small world and it tends to attract all the same people, or is it just because, like you said, it is a small
You've introduced a topic that I learned a lot of on the doorsteps. We do have a diversity in our 120,000 population that is not reflected on the council, on the
Absolutely.
Staff. There's, if you look around, and you look at these two people in front of you, it's kind of old white guys, right? And part of that is that it's a cultural thing, but I really want to work. In fact, my first day in City Hall when we were actually working with human resources to get our pay sorted out and details like that, I actually said to the woman that was in charge of that aspect, I said, what do you think about... the fact that how does this new council look to you? And she hadn't really thought about it. And I said, well, one reason it looks like that is that this city is growing, but it's a part-time job working on council. If you are someone able to do pretty well a full-time job for part-time pay, it means either that you're retired or that you have an independent income. And as we change and grow, someone else, maybe a new Canadian, some younger people, that's going to be a real tough thing for them to do unless that system changes. So it perpetuates that lack of diversity. And because this is, there's a, in the staff, I think it's great it's going that way, but you probably, it's just like any other corporation. Once you're in there, there's you can find a way to stay there. And we have a lot of growing pains in those things that, that needs to change, and that the way to change it is to change how our democracy works a little bit, change how our, what our approach is, and I'm excited about looking at that too.
I essentially have to agree with James. As he said, you're either retired or you have some sort of a support network that will allow you to do this job. In my case, I'm retired. In James' case, I mean, he's a kept man. He has all his groupies that are looking after
him. That's right.
And so he can do this, and he'll be able to do it well. It did strike me that in Guelph, that we are a tremendously white community, and even more so that we have a tremendously white middle class. That was something that I'd never really keyed into until a neighbor of mine told me that when, he's an MD, and when he came to Guelph, he came here looking for a community where his kids could grow up in a really multicultural, multi-ethnic setting. And then when he set down roots, he discovered that that was not true. And then the more I looked at it, the more I realized it's absolutely the case within within our city, that within our city administration, within our city council, that we are in some senses replicating a Guelph of the 1950s and 60s, where ethnicity is really mooted.
Well, not to come back to politics at all, but I think one of the I think one of the things people have questions about coming out of the election, Ian Finley, the former Ward 2 councillor, had a tremendous blog that I think a lot of people in town got information from. Are you taking that over at all, James?
There are plans to do that. Yeah.
Okay. I, on the other hand, I'm going to be doing something similar. I do use social media. And I will be doing social media from the perspective of what I think that I've been best at in so many ways, and that is community activism and facilitation. I hope that it will become something that's organic, where there is dialogue about the city, and that there is opportunities for people to provide input and to get answers. But more importantly, what I still intend to do is I still intend to contact residents of Ward 3 directly. As I said, I cannot count on somebody who's 85, or in the case of one woman, one person who voted for me, 100 years of age, to suddenly become savvy on Facebook or Twitter. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Nor are the town hall meetings that were promoted in the 1990s necessarily an answer. We have to get out and we have to talk to people right at their door, because that's how people have traditionally communicated, and it's not a bad way to do it. It's a really good way to keep in touch with neighborhoods and really see the immediate problems and the issues that are bothering people.
Were you bothered at all by the recount, Phil? There was a rather famous recount in your ward, five votes separating June Laughlin and Craig Chamberlain. Did that impact you at all, or your training or your plans going forward?
No. What I will say is that I was campaigning against some very good people, and I was very fortunate to have been successful and to actually have topped the polls and be essentially 10% ahead of the nearest person, who was June Hofflin. I think June and Craig represent different constituencies. Maggie Laidlaw represents another constituency, and Jason Dodge and Bob Moore are equally representative of the ward. They were all fine people. I talked to all of them except Craig. I didn't want to talk to him until the recount was done. I thought that it was only appropriate that we'll let the dust settle, because it could have been a legal issue. Craig is not going to contest it, and I have a lot of respect for him for doing that. But this is a guy that cares so much about the city that he's run three times. And he's run because he believes in the city. I might not agree with him on some of his points of view, and I might not agree with him on certain approaches that he takes, but you cannot take away from him that Guelph matters to him.
Yeah.
And in some senses, I'm sorry that he wasn't successful. On the other hand, I'm very happy that I was successful, and you know, I have to say that. I don't want it to be implied that that I think that he should have won over June. But here's a guy who really cares about his community, and the recount did cast a pall. What did disturb me about it was the number of people in the recount, because I was there, who were not members of Ward 3, but felt that they had a vested interest in the outcome of that. And
regular people, not staff.
Regular people who had come representing one candidate or another, who really were trying to politicize the recount.
Irregular people.
And that, to me, did not speak positively about what should be a council of consensus. Whether it's Craig or June or Jason or Bob or Maggie or me from Ward 3, we have to work with James and Andy, with Marilyn Guthrie, and a whole gamut of different individuals. And that politicization was, I think, the introduction of an Americanism into Canadian city council politics that I don't think is necessarily welcome.
It was a matter of math, not a matter of politics.
It's a matter of math. Right. It's an absolute matter of math.
I wanted to ask you, James, about the breakfast you had with the other Ward 2 candidates.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting.
I think that I would hope it would be a template for elections where, yeah, we all got together after and we had... We defied that sense that I had mentioned to you earlier, that there was this divisive campaign and everyone was very cordial and supported one another. We felt really safe in calling each other up and saying, hey, where did you get your signs? Could I call those guys too? And questions like that. And the fact that we debriefed after meant that the candidates who didn't win still knew that they mattered and that they wanted find ways. They were asking questions. Well, how can I stay engaged? How can I stay involved with the process? And yeah, it was awesome.
These musicians are always wanting to debrief.
That's right.
I come from a more conservative culture.
Well, you're a musician too.
Yeah, that's right.
Nobody's asked me to debrief.
I'll show you mine.
There are quite a few musicians on the council.
That's right. There's the makings of a band.
I was
going to
say.
Yeah. In truth, Adam, what I really wanted to do, and I haven't said this to James yet, but I really thought it'd be great if James would open council sometime with O Canada. I don't think you want to hear my pipes, but his pipes are quite acceptable.
Now, and I should say next week there at our inaugural meeting, there's actually the Guelph Youth Singers are singing a song about Guelph that I wrote. And I'm going to get up and play my guitar with them. And that might set a bit of a precedent.
And now you have a blurb for your next album cover. That's quite acceptable.
Oh, yeah.
perhaps to wrap up, what's the thing you want to get done first? I mean, I know that budget is the top priority, but in terms of maybe your own personal priority, what's the first thing you're going to be looking at when you actually have the power?
I've actually had an issue that's been driving me as an advocate and as a concerned citizen for years and through a lot of different groups, right through the Water Watchers and through my other campaigns, and that is around water. Mm-hmm. And we have an accident waiting to happen right at the edge of town, which is the Doline Quarry, and it's been stuck because it sits by some corrupt gerrymandering right outside the city limits, and it gets confused as to which government body is in charge of it. So it keeps getting passed around and around and around, and I think it's gone around enough. It's time for them to take a hike. They gotta shut that thing down, and I'd like to try to generate more interest instead of just passing the buck and say, okay, we can do it. Let's do it now.
Mine's a more mundane concern. I really would like to see City explore the possibility of a skateboard park in the Willow Road area. And the reason for that is exactly what I said earlier. The Willow Road area has the highest concentration of kids and poverty in the whole of the city. And it has the lowest percentage of accessible, usable facilities. Anybody that's in that area has to somehow find a way to get either to the library in the West End or the library uptown or to the pools holes in the arenas in the West End or elsewhere, and it's very, very difficult for them. It seems to me that if we look at a place like Willow Road School, we have a natural opportunity for facility sharing. The playing field at Willow Road School has not changed since I went there 45 years ago when it was first opened. It would be a gold mine in terms of developing opportunities for kids in that area. So I'm being very selfish, but it's a ward issue for me. It's a poverty issue, and it's an accessibility issue.
And it's doable.
It's doable. It's absolutely doable. But we need the will to skateboard. Mm-hmm.
The will to skateboard. That's a good place. that's a good place to leave it at. So James Gordon, Phil Ault, thank you for talking to me today.
Thanks, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having us.
And once again, that was Phil Ault, councillor-elect for Ward 3, and James Gordon, councillor-elect for Ward 2, and they will take their positions on Guelph City Council when it convenes for the 2014 to 2018 council session on December the 1st. And that also brings a wrap this edition of the Guelph Politicast, this first fireside chat with two new city councillors. I hope it was informative and enlightening. And if it wasn't, I hope it was just enjoyable. But I think it was all three. You may be the judge, and of course you may comment if you judge that inaccurate, but that's your decision. Anyway, the theme music for the Guelph Politicast is provided by The Crazy Pills and their song Break It Down. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean, and to find more episodes, you can click on the Guelph Politicast logo at the side of the screen, which will take you to the Podbean site. And of course, stay tuned for future editions of the Guelph Politicast. I hope to have a couple of more podcasts pumped out by the end of the year. And then, of course, more coming up in 2015, including more fireside chats. And I hope you will come back and listen to them. But until then, thank you for listening. And I'll see you next time.